You're listening to GDNcom.com, the Dublin Broadcast Network. Hit the key to enter. Ouch.
Welcome to the Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on. Anyways, welcome back to the Gamers Haven Podcast. We've been gone for a while, technically. Well, we all went off to Christmas and to New Year's, and we didn't record for quite a while.
And the foul, horrid weather that followed.
Yes, we're sitting looking outside, looking at sheets of ice and nastiness here in the quote-unquote great state of Kansas.
At least it melted a little bit.
Yeah, but then it refroze as it got cold tonight.
Yeah,
but it's still not as bad as it was.
It's going to keep doing that for a couple days. It's supposed to snow this weekend, too.
30% chance. In other words, snowball's chance in hell.
Well, but in Kansas, we don't believe in evolution, so we don't have to believe in snow either.
That's true. And by the way, some people drive, they don't believe in snow.
That's true. They just try to kill the rest of us.
Yeah. And then there's those of us who try to drive safe, but end up in places where they don't salt your parking lot, so you play car pinball.
Woohoo!
Which, let me tell you, when you're driving a somewhat newer car and you haven't paid it off yet, is one of the most horribly frightening things in the world. Please God stop. Oh, thank God.
Or when your front tires are bald. That's fun, too.
Dude, you did the best donuts ever.
Or you let Mansquito start your car.
You know, I didn't even think of that. I was afraid Mansquito would, you know, freeze, so I gave him a nice turtleneck and, you know, let him stay warm and stuff and fed him the neighbors.
We didn't need the neighbors.
Well, with his neighbors, they won't be missed.
No. I have nice neighbors, though. Man.
I didn't know they won't be missed.
I didn't know we had neighbors down here.
We did. But you know that whole new section we just knocked the wall into? That was our neighbors.
We now have
a new section.
They were okay. You know, Neanderthals are all nice and cool and all, but, you know, they are supposed to be extinct.
Yeah.
So we just made them seem more
But so. Remember, we're in Kansas, so we can't believe in that.
Well, we're not technically in Kansas. Kansas ends where the soil ends, man.
That's true.
Well, but the government owns so much down, so...
We're below that.
Yeah, we're below that, though. We're below the subsurface.
Yeah,
believe me, I've been reading about land rights.
Technically, we're about what, a half a mile above the shifting base for the plate?
No, you know, we got the...
Which is why it stays
warm. I know
warm.
We have a geothermal tap around here somewhere, so...
That's why it stays warm, is we're not very far above the geodesic area.
It is fun throwing those paper mache monsters from the cave into the you know, molten lava down.
Are you throwing my pinatas down there?
Those are pinatas?
You bastard! They're living pinatas! I've been working months to perfect them. They don't come out like the pinatas in that game I play, but...
Oh, no.
I'm not that creative, what can I say?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you might try some color next time instead of just, like...
Red and black?
Sheet metal gray.
Well, originally they were red and black. Why are they turning sheet metal gray?
I'm stealing the color.
Why?
He's stealing the color.
Don't ask.
Okay. Well, so I guess today we're going to be talking about modern games and espionage stuff.
Modern and espionage predominantly, because that's about the only modern, really, like, predominantly modern genre. There are others, you know, we could talk a little bit about war and various things in this one as well.
Wasn't there Superheroes Inc. or International or something like that?
Well, superheroes, though, falls under superheroes.
Yeah. What about that one that was about spies and...
Oh, ninjas, spies, and super spies?
Yeah.
Or, there are a ton of those games out there. We can talk about that in the description.
It was the James Bond game. It's a contemporary game.
Yes, that's true. The James Bond game from,
West End Games, I thought.
I didn't know there was a James Bond game.
There was.
There was a James Bond role-playing game in the 80s, and it was not from West End Games. I can't remember the name of the company. It's on the tip of my brain, but I'll put it in the show notes. You can find, like, copies of that book online for, like, $2.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
It is everywhere. I've heard good things about it, though. It's supposed to be really good. But
another modern one that would be modern but not really a spy or espionage one would be that Chill game from Mayfair Games.
Chill? That's more horror, though, wouldn't it be?
It was horror, but it was a modern-day horror.
That's true.
It was contemporary. It wasn't like Call of Cthulhu, which, whereas they have contemporary Cthulhu, most Cthulhu takes place in the 1890s or 1920s.
Right.
This was, Chill was actually predominantly in the now.
Well, would you consider World War II games modern?
That's more modern than, say...
That would be more modern, yeah. I would say. Industrial age, you know.
So anything...
Because it's not really... I would say, when you get past modern, you get into pulp, but we're sort of getting our head of ourselves.
If you go too far back, though,
we're gonna be back after these wonderful messages, and we're gonna get into this.
We have messages.
We do subliminal messages.
Can I steal them too?
I attack the kobold wearing the headdress made of human ears.
Okay, give me a roll.
Okay, guys, roll to hit the vampire gazebo. You hit.
Hey, guys, what are you doing? Role-playing?
Oh, no, it's that guy. No, we're not doing anything. We're just watching TV.
Aw, that's too bad, because I brought along my new gaming girlfriend.
Hello, boys. Mind if I max out on charisma?
Whoa! Hey, did you get that hot gaming girlfriend from listening to Gamer the Podcasting?
Yeah, of course!
Gamer the Podcasting does not actually get you a hot gamer girlfriend. What it actually does is give you useful advice on tabletop role-playing, live-action role-playing, and all other forms of role-playing games. Sometimes we talk about other games. We can do whatever we want. It's our own podcast. Visit us on the web at www.gamerthepodcasting.com.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
Well, we're back, and today on the discussion, we're going to be talking, like we said in the intro, about modern games, espionage-esque things, and... Well, modern stuff. And as Jeremy was, I guess, you know, trying to point out...
Where's the line?
Yeah, where's the line? What do we want to call modern?
Because the industrial age could be a little thing.
See, I consider...
World War II, World War I?
I would consider...
World War I is almost
like anything 1940s on would be modern, because before 1940s, I would consider it to be relatively pulp. The pulp genre.
So how far up do we want to go?
Well, you know, near future is about as far as I'd go, because then you get into science fiction.
Near future as in, like, 2010?
No, we're talking about contemporary technology.
Are we talking about Space Odyssey?
No.
No.
That's science fiction, Jeremy. No more mescaline for you.
It's not mescaline, it's World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
It's crack.
World of... Warcrack, I understand. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, yes. He has joined our little addiction.
No, I haven't. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's twitching. You can't see it, but he's twitching. He hasn't played today yet.
Here's your shot.
Hold him on server. I have level 20 fighter. You guys are evil.
Yes, we are.
But modern games.
Yes, modern games.
So that's what I would say. 1940s on up to about modern day. You know, if you're running something in the 1940s... I mean, predominantly, you're obviously going to deal with the war, World War II. Would you consider most war games sort of be the modern day?
Depends on the war game.
I would not consider World War I modern, due to the fact that, yeah, it had modernized weaponry, but they still fought with contemporary tactics, which was rush the other side. Oh, they've got a machine gun. They got a machine gun. Just send 50,000 more people.
And lancers and machine guns and lancers.
And tanks.
Yeah.
So World War II and the Cold War.
Right. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Cold War.
You get into a modern game. I mean, predominantly, when I think of a modern game, I'm thinking espionage-style gaming. Because who really wants to, you know, sit around and play in a modern genre game that, hey, I gotta go to work and...
So RL. Real life.
Real life.
No one wants to play real life.
No real life D20, thanks. That's not good for me.
I'd rather play a cat.
There is a game like that.
I know.
There's nothing wrong with the cats.
I know.
It's supposed to be quite a good game.
I'm just saying this. If it was a choice between real life role-playing and playing as a cat, defending the world against extraplanar creatures, something I'd rather play a cat.
That's what cats do.
Yeah.
That would explain why mine always howls at the ceiling.
They worship Bast and defend the world from things that shouldn't be here.
Excellent. So I know my house is safe.
So therefore, we can enter into the modern age and beyond.
Excellent.
Because the cats defend us.
But espionage, yes, espionage.
Yes. Obviously, we're going to start thinking James Bond, Mission Impossible stuff, when you're thinking of a modern-day thing.
Which, we can throw in the nice little thing about the new James Bond movie.
Casino Royale?
Yeah, Casino Royale.
Which is
great
apparently
movie.
Very
which
great.
Was awesome.
Oh, it's an awesome
very
movie.
Very good film.
Don't take your children.
No, don't take your children, especially to a 9 o'clock show.
Horrible torture scene.
Yeah.
Great movie. It's a great movie.
Oh, fantastic film, yes. But if you are running, like Nathan didn't know that there was a James Bond role-playing game.
I did.
Was it?
No, I didn't.
Jeremy didn't. I knew about it.
This was 5 minutes ago. I don't remember that. I really think it was put out by a company called Valiant Publishing. I really can't remember off the top of my head.
I'm sure if we get it wrong, someone out there will know.
I'll find it.
Yeah.
But the James Bond RPG, I never actually played that. I did actually have the Q manual from it, which was pretty cool.
The only thing I can remember about it when I played it was that there was actually no lethal weapons in the game for the spies, which I thought was kind of retarded.
Yeah. It was like the movies mainly. You had guns, but it was like the movies.
But I thought it was just kind of strange because in all the James Bond movies I've seen, they've always had weapons that were lethal weapons, and they mowed down countless mooks on many, many occasions.
Well, think about the James Bond game. It really dealt more with the gadgets and the big thing in it was the seduction and stuff like that, where you would actually seduce another, like an NPC and whatnot, and actually do the Bond thing.
Something a new one.
Well, that's the movie, not the game.
That's true.
Did he not seduce the woman in the movie?
Well, he didn't seduce the spies. He killed the spies.
Yes.
Lots.
Horribly.
Horribly.
Awesome.
With
But...
Sprays.
Really?
As far as...
It was PG-13.
No, it was R.
It was R?
I'm pretty sure it was R.
No, it was PG-13.
No, it wasn't? It should have been R.
It was not rated R.
Whoa. It should have been R.
But holy crap.
as far as an espionage game, the only one I've had experience running is Spook Show, which delves a bit more into the supernatural. Spook Show is put out by Clockworks Games, and I'll talk about that more in the review.
But great game.
The thing I've always noticed, though, if you're doing an espionage game, at least with me, it's hard for me to run because the type of GM I am is I like to have a lot of stuff mapped out. And with an espionage game is you have to have a sort of a deep story, and you have to know what contacts they need to talk to and what evidence they need to find, come up with, you know, interesting things where they could interact more with the characters rather than just straight combat. Because if you do that, then you're pretty much just playing a feng shui game. Nothing wrong with feng shui. We obviously love feng shui. But that's, you know, different type of a genre in and of itself.
So basically you have to be good at running something like a Call of Cthulhu game.
In my opinion, yes.
Something like that where it's more player interaction than action interaction.
Exactly. And you have to be good at doing NPCs, which is one thing I'm lacking compared to you guys.
I'm terrible at making NPCs.
Jeremy's the NPC king.
Yeah.
I might be good at NPCs, but I don't do espionage very well.
I do espionage really well.
Have you
well,
ever run any espionage games, though?
I've not games, per se. I've had some espionage in games.
Right.
And usually...
I remember you did some sort of espionage thing in a D&D game once, which was interesting.
Yeah, usually my espionage has something to do behind the scenes, which surprises the players. Or the players want to attempt espionage and it ends badly.
Right.
Well, that's because we're not spies.
So again, you need to have good players that are going to work with you with espionage because you have to have players that will plan and will actually try to think something out rather than, oh, hey, we screwed up, let's shoot everyone and kill everybody. Because especially in the type of espionage games that I know of, is you do that, you're going to get wasted. I mean, Spook Show especially, the combat's deadly.
Yeah, it's like six or seven. Well, if you get in a fist fight, if you get hit like six or seven times, you're out.
Yeah, pretty much.
It'll knock you out. You get shot two or three times.
Yeah, the Spook Show has ghosts.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
The thing is when you're in physical form, you can be knocked down to basically what would be classified as unconscious. You disapparate.
So another part of modern gaming is you have, a lot of times you can also add the supernatural into it. You know, is the spook show is a good example. Buffy, Buffy and Angel, any of those types of games. White Wolf, that's a modern game.
To a point.
That's a different. It's an alternate reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're adding in supernatural. You're adding in. I mean, you're going to make every game an alternate timeline in and of itself, just because
you want to be
running it in your own little thing. White Wolf. I mean, I've had a little bit of experience running a werewolf game, and I think the best way to, especially with White Wolf, is to use the Jeremy taught me this was to use if you use a White Wolf game, don't stick straight to the mythology, or don't stick straight to the storyline. Use it as a mythology rather than you know, the set in stone. This is what's happening, because otherwise
use it as mythology rather than rhetoric.
Right, because then it becomes just
boring.
Oh God, boring.
Oh my God, boring.
In my humble opinion, I mean, some people
it becomes
hopeless. The vampire gods are going to eat you. The werewolves are all going to die, and the mages are the mages are going to leave.
Yeah, they just leave. They just leave.
Or they don't, and
Paradox
consumes them. They, or the technology.
Well, even when Paradox consumes them, they go into Paradox realms.
That's true. Which is sometimes in
the which way. Is the same thing as leaving.
Yeah. Or the technocracy wins.
Or the technocracy gets them, and that's bad.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I don't know. Espionage isn't my strong point. I'm usually a lot more straightforward. Haven't played a lot of espionage games, seen lots of James Bond, you know, movies and such. But there is tons going on in our world that you could actually run an interesting, as long as your players are okay with working in real life events.
Right.
I mean,
and with that, I would say definitely write what you know. You know, if you, like, we live in Kansas City. I mean, probably the best thing for us to do if we were running a modern game would be to set it in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Or do your research, you know. If you're going to set something in Hong Kong, read a good book on Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Use the World Wide Web. Use the Internet. That's a great resource.
Murder mysteries, you know, work in a modern. Yeah, you could be police officers hunting down, like, serial killers and... Mm-hmm. You know, you could throw in some psychic stuff.
CSI Mindenheim.
But it depends on how much realism do you want. Do you want your modern-day campaign just to be like real life, except the players get into craziness in the sense of...
There's a game that's no longer in print called Immortal.
Oh, yes.
If you've heard of it, it's where you make yourself, mm-hmm. and then you hand your character sheet off to other people. Or is that how it works? Other people make you?
Other people make you.
Other people make your make you, saying, like me and Nathan here would make a character sheet of Jeremy, saying this is what Jeremy's stats are.
Why do I have
and then
three
the whole point of the whole point of Immortal, the whole point of Immortal though is you used to be like immortal, you used to be a god,
God-like
but you
creature.
Forgot. And the whole thing
you
is...
You made yourself forget.
And as the game progresses, you rediscover these powers you had. And it actually sounded really cool.
See, that's my goal in real life.
To discover that you once were a god?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
I'm going to have to keep that from happening. With modern... I think modern gaming is kind of hard to do, I think, because modern times are so ingrained in people. Like with fantasy, you have pretty much a blank slate, and you can work with it however you want. You can say whatever's happening, but in a modern game, you have a lot going on where you have to really ground it in reality.
And the thing is, you really don't have to ground it in reality.
You feel you have.
Whole object of seeing things happening and going, well, I'd like that to happen in my game. But the thing is once that happens, it's irrevocable.
We know
right.
how things. We know that. People have to work and have to pay their bills. We know how much things cost, and you kind of get you start thinking along that lines. At least I do, and then you have to kind of break out of that.
Yeah, you have to keep putting yourself back in that sort of that fantasy mindset or the sci-fi mindset, and don't think about the mundane. If you're going to do a modern day setting, do the modern day setting. Don't hold back, though.
You could do like an X-Files.
Yeah,
X-Files is a great example.
Yeah,
or X-Files, Supernatural.
Or Supernatural.
Supernatural, you know, X-Files had sci-fi elements, had fantasy elements, had all these elements.
Millennium.
But it was a modern day setting.
Brimstone.
Supernatural, modern day setting. You know, all of this is modern, but there's things in there that are just off. I don't know, I would find it interesting to play a game where you do start normal, boring lives.
Well, like you were telling me about Nightbane.
Yeah, Nightbane is a good example. Modern day. You're sitting there, you're normal people. Something happens. I don't remember if it's a meteor, if it's a... It's something. Something big happens, and suddenly your buddy who's sitting in the chair, wings pop out of his back, and suddenly he's, you know, has tentacles coming out of his chest, and he has 50 eyeballs, and he has a zipper down his, you know... chest, and he can take out his heart, and you know, all these horrible twisted things. And the whole point is to fight the demon inside and protect the innocent around you, or
just let yourself be consumed.
Let yourself,
and go psycho.
Which was a lot of fun visiting an old high school.
Would you say then modern? It isn't. I would say modern really isn't a genre in and of itself.
More of a backdrop.
It's more of something you tack on, like you're going to do a modern horror or a modern
science fiction,
really, a modern fantasy game, modern pulp game.
If you don't do something like that, it will become just RL. It really will. It'll
real life, yeah.
Your character stands up, you know, in the morning.
Today we're playing... Today the scenario is you get to go stamp labels on cans. Yeah. Roll your d20.
Oh, you critically failed.
You failed!
You got fired. And people don't want to do that. That's why... That's why, like Dice, you know, d20 Modern. That's why they have... I believe it's the... And you guys can correct me later on. It's like the Arcana Locker or something like that. They have an Arcana expansion to it.
Yeah, Urban Arcana.
Urban Arcana, where it's magic in a modern environment.
And D20 Modern is a good book, actually.
It is.
I enjoy it.
The classes in it
are I felt that they really were ripping off a lot from Feng Shui.
Oh, yeah.
Feng Shui is a great modern game.
Did they have a gangbanger class in that book?
Something like, it might have been one of the prestige classes, but they had, and D20 Modern, it was more like, you know, you had fast hero, strong hero, and you chose an archetype, which
then
is
you
just,
went to
then you went on to a career,
prestige,
basically,
a prestige class,
and which was pretty much all like Feng Shui, is you took, hey, I'm a maverick cop, or hey, I'm
but
a
it's
big kind of
hard to take,
you know?
Feng Shui and put it into, like, if you want a modern character, and you want him to go into a D&D setting, it's really easy to do that with Dice 20. With a Feng Shui character, you can't do that. I mean, yeah, maybe they did rip some off. But Feng Shui is completely different. I mean, I believe it's completely different.
Well, yeah, it's the same thing as going, well, we're going to play a Feng Shui game versus, hey, let's play a White Wolf game. It's two different games. It's two different mindsets.
And really, I mean, all games...
Two different sets of expectations.
All games do have a tendency to rip something off one way or another.
Original
ideas
that.
Are kind
well,
of
well, even
of
the
mind.
Original Dungeons and Dragons game was heavily influenced by like the Lord of the Rings books.
Yeah, Tolkien and yeah.
And even before Tolkien's Lord of the Rings,
there are very few original ideas anymore. Just better ways of
packaging. Which he bases races off of.
Yeah.
Elves, dwarves, those legends go back in various different cultures for thousands of years.
Yeah, and I mean, Feng Shui works great. I like it for a shorter one. A modern game would be I don't know if I'd want to play a long modern game. I'd want it to turn into something else.
Right.
But I could do something like an alien invasion.
Oh, that would be great.
I mean, really, if you started with a fast hero or a farmer, a strong hero, and then he gets into, after like a few games, after the aliens are invading, he becomes a soldier.
So I think what we're trying to point out, I think, is that if you don't do it right, a modern setting can get really boring.
Yeah.
Because you live in a modern world every day. You don't live in a fantasy world. You don't live in a sci-fi world.
At least not yet.
But with a modern game, you know, don't get caught up on the mundane. I think that's what we're really pointing out.
rather than exploring and expanding on the ordinary day-to-day life, explore and expand on the fantastical things that don't really normally happen.
I mean, there's enough things going on in a modern-day world that, I mean, if you want to do a, you know, thought political thriller, go right ahead.
You could.
But the thing you'd want to do definitely is do your homework and, you know.
And certainly, if you do your homework and do all that work, definitely, you know, write it all up in a book format. You could become the next Tom Clancy.
Exactly.
Make sure you have players that are willing to play that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Because I personally would be like, I pull out my machine gun and gun them down.
Black Ops!
What do you mean?
No witnesses!
You didn't have a metal detector, so I brought in my machine gun. I have a government credit card. I've also rigged the whole place with explosives. This isn't... You guys aren't leaving.
Yeah.
I mean,
suddenly one of the player characters becomes a terrorist.
Yeah, it's like... for the good of America! You know? They're not giving us what we want. Gun them down. Call them Apaches.
Oh, yeah. Don't let your modern game turn into, hey, let's vent on what's happening in the world today.
Unless you need that.
Unless you need that, yes. But I'd say if you need that, go play your first-person shooter or something and blow stuff up.
Go play a game where you get to blow stuff up and have chunky body parts fly everywhere, like throwing grenades in Gears of War.
Yeah. Freakishly cool game.
But you could play Soldier somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Which gets us into the war.
Yeah.
You know? I've only touched on playing in doing a war game. You know, I in my superhero game once, I actually had you guys pop up in the middle of an alternate reality where Canada was being invaded by Nazis. But war. I mean, what would you point out as far as war? I think you're the one who initially brought up a war game.
War is one of those things that it's really difficult to do. And
talk more like Band of Brothers and
war is really difficult to do in like a pencil and paper based setting. Actually, war is really easy to do with miniature styles games.
Well,
if you're doing a role playing game with war, if you have the squad,
if you
make the players all make members of a squad, you know.
Though be careful with it. I played. I don't remember the name of the game. It was a good idea. It was at Gen Con. And I sat in on this World War II game.
The miniatures game.
Godlike.
Yes. And
with the superpowers?
Well, no, but there was no superpowers.
You're talking about the one with the World War II characters.
Yeah, I don't think it was Godlike. Godlike was cool.
Godlike was cool.
This was a different World War II game. And I remember one of us was the sniper, one of us was the machine gun guy. And you got all these idiots. Including me together.
Well, that's also a convention game.
It was, but also something I discovered about the game was it was so deadly. Like, our sniper's leg got blown off, and he was out. You know, another guy got gunned down, and he got knocked out.
I just want to go ahead and say it now. Is I don't like games where the combat is ultra deadly. I understand some people love the realism. That's great, but... You know, if you get into a gunfight, I more like the cinematic style of a role-playing game where, you know, you look like hell when you come. You look like John McClane on a bad day at the end of the game, but you're still alive.
You can kill a player, but they're...
You can get shot 12 times and you're still alive.
There comes a point when it's ridiculous because you're not having fun. You're like,
I want to get to cover because I'm going to die.
And
there's no... It combats the heroism, you know?
Yeah. But as I was saying before we started on that,
sorry.
I don't really think, even with like doing a squad and having each person be like a squad member, I don't really think pencil and paper and dice role-playing games really lend themselves well to doing war games, because war games are very much strategy-based, and with war games, with strategy, single-unit combat techniques is very difficult to do. It's better... when you have multiple actual units that you're going to use, what you're going to do is called unit-based tactics. And I played like two. There was one that was called Tags of Something, and it ended up failing. It was cool. They did like WizKids-style figures, but it never came out.
Yeah,
it showcased at Gen Con.
I played that with you, yes.
Yeah, that was
great. That was a really fun game.
But it disappeared.
I think with a miniatures game, though, you lack that emotional attachment to your guy.
Yeah, but the thing
is characters.
With the deadliness of a war-based setting, and the fact that...
It's a fine line. You have, if you're playing in a war setting, you have to always have that feeling of war looming over you. Just watch any war movie. It's the big prevailing thing. And if you're running a hero, you know, it's like, hey, I'm going to go showdown go on a showdown with this tank. Well, realistically,
you need to die. You're just gonna, you but know. I mean,
it's hard to build that mood.
The best thing I can say is if you're interested in doing like a squad-based pencil and paper dice role-playing game of a war, your best bet would be to go check out Band of Brothers,
mm-hmm.
Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
Check out a
computer, Flags of Our Fathers.
Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima.
Yeah, that's not out yet, but it's supposed to be out.
Probably by the time this comes out, it'll be out.
Yeah.
Other thing to check would be the actual the Brothers in Arms computer games video games.
Mm-hmm.
Check out the Call of Duty series, of course.
Call of Duty. What's that game? Medal of Honor.
Medal of Honor is more of a single player.
Medal of Honor is very fun stuff.
But Band of Brother in Arms is completely it's squad based, all of it.
Right.
There's never a moment when you're alone in that game. So if you're looking for
it's also hard
to
think in a war
idea.
In a war genre in a war setting, in terms not involving combat, because it's a war. Obviously, war's going to be great for hey, let's go kill all these people. But what are you guys going to do if you need to do? If you want to role play? Who are you going to role play with? You know. Send them behind enemy lines. I mean, what's that's the problem with doing a war game.
I can't remember the name of that game. There's another one, Company of Heroes. It's a real-time strategy game. That one's a really good one of showing you how small unit-based combat would go. But yeah, you're right. It's really hard to do any role-playing in a war-based scenario because you're going to be thinking about the war.
Unless
right.
the
combat.
War is the background and you are a special unit that does things like espionage
mm-hmm.
and... You know,
so don't just do
and,
combat in
yeah,
war. In
I mean,
war
you
game.
Gotta, as your characters
spice
go up in level, yeah, I mean, you might start out as just normal grunt.
Do spy stuff, dude.
And then people go,
weapons,
oh, well, these people are actually powerful, you know.
Right.
Let's train them in, you know, demolitions and stuff like that.
Right, right.
So like commandos.
Yeah.
So if you do a war game, a war genre, don't just
and then throw
focus
an alien
on the
in
combat.
There, too. Who can turn invisible.
Exactly.
An alien predator.
Bad Jeremy.
It's modern.
Yeah, and there are comic books about predators during World War I and World War II that were put out by Dark Horse a long time
see,
ago.
See, I still say the first Predator movie really, I don't classify that as science fiction.
No, I think it was
an
modern.
Adventure film. It's a horror film. You know.
It was an awesome film.
It's an awesome film, yeah.
Second was
but
okay,
didn't have,
not,
but the soldiers
style.
Didn't have... high-tech weaponry. It was all very...
For the time.
For the time, yes, but it was still modern-esque.
Compared to the Predator, it was low-tech.
Yeah, the Predator is like,
it's a modern. It's a modern film, and it's more supernatural film because it's a supernatural force going after them. Well, when you say supernatural, you immediately think werewolves and vampires,
no,
but supernatural is also aliens. They're supernatural.
Yeah, they're not.
You know,
they're
not the norm.
They're not the norm.
That could be... Just look at the first Alien film. For
you
could
also
you know?
Do... there's genetics. That's actually a modern thing.
Yeah, look at... If you give a good example of that, look at Far Cry.
Far Cry. You could even do a modern island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, yeah.
You could
with
do
the,
that.
Genetic
yeah,
animals.
Genetic
yeah.
creatures
animals.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. That was a messed up
and
movie.
You can make it all science.
Or, like, or do a role-playing game in the vein of Lost, you know, where you're... on an island and having to figure stuff out.
That would be interesting, because that would be real life, but that would be interesting with the struggle against whatever there's
right.
there. You know, that... Or
Jericho.
So you obviously have to have your conflict in that, or Jericho is the post-apocalyptic thing.
Yeah, that's still a modern-day setting, but it's post-apocalyptic.
Because it's before...
But it's not set, you know,
actual,
years after
yeah.
the war, after yeah. bombs have dropped.
Because
it's,
as soon as the cannibals...
And the mutants
show up.
And the atomic robots.
At that point, it becomes sci-fi.
Don't forget the atomic robots.
Don't like the actor, but I don't like that show.
The I was A-team. Trying to think of another
That's
modern
a
fun
that
cool
is a,
thing.
That is a good modern
the
example.
A-team.
The A-Team. Airwolf.
Airwolf. A-team. That type of thing where you're just a bunch of either ex-soldiers
of
or science or whatever, but Correct. You're fighting the good fight.
Living in the Los Angeles underground.
Or Kansas City or wherever. Driving a van.
Kansas
Whatever.
City Underground.
The Kansas City Underground.
Yeah.
We know it's bigger
than... They'd survive as Soldiers of Fortune, you know.
Or bounty hunters.
Or bounty hunters.
Or you could do a cops episode.
You do a
cops.
That would be Mad Dog. Pretty funny.
Entirely cops.
Mad Dog or Bear. What's the big bounty hunter guy? That
Dog. Running? Dog the bounty hunter.
Dog the bounty hunter.
That would be
good. Dog the bounty hunter.
He's awesome, by the way.
Use the bear mace on someone.
He doesn't actually use bear mace, but that's fine. I wish he would.
Well, like you're talking genetics, Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
That would be creepy. Being hunted.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny. Down at Tabletop, going through the GURPS books, there's GURPS cops.
Yeah.
GURPS now, I don't have any GURPS books. I was tempted to buy that.
Insert here the theme
Some
song.
Some GURPS
from
books
cops.
Are really good for just source material, yeah. As are the hero books. From what I understand, Pulp Hero is a really good just resource.
Cool.
So it just talks a lot about the pulp genre, and I really like to pick it up. There's actually one called The Ultimate Skill, which apparently just talks about skills.
Cool.
And how they affect things. It's really
like,
cool.
I'd still like to get my hands on that. Remember that book that we saw at Gen Con called Pulp? I think it was Pulp Adventure? The one where it had, like, the dinosaurs and... It was set in, like, the near modern times, like 1930s.
Spirit of the Century?
No, I don't think so.
This
I thought
is
it was
a big one now.
I thought it was, like, Pulp Adventure or something. It was a big, thick book. And they had miniatures on the table.
Just an adventure.
Well, I don't actually know how big the modern or D20 modern is right now. I don't actually have any idea how big it is.
Big what is?
The modern?
The modern, D20? Like, yeah, or D20 or even the modern people playing modern.
There's a lot of pulp games
I don't
out
hear
there,
a right? lot of people playing it.
Yeah.
You know, that might just be based on our current
Yeah, exactly.
Placement.
I mean, yeah, if you guys out there, you know, want to pipe in, that's fine, because I actually don't know. The few modern games I've played, I mean...
White Wolf, Spring
they've been
Machine,
fun.
Feng Shui,
I mean,
White
they've
Wolf.
They've been fun, but yeah. I just don't know.
I don't think I've ever played a modern game with you that
yeah,
you've yeah. run.
Oh, not that I've run.
Not
no.
that you've run. I've played in it, you know, White Wolf and
You were not
Feng
in my test Spook Show game.
No.
Well, eventually
I've played in Spook Show before.
Eventually one of these days I'll have to try to run another game of Spook Show. I very much enjoyed playing that game.
It is a good game. But we'll talk about that here momentarily. But we'll be back with the three-parter after this.
End of line.
All aboard! All aboard the Orient Express!
London.
Paris.
Sofia, Milan.
Venice.
Constantinople.
YogSothoth.com presents Horror on the Orient Express, a role-playing adventure from Chaosium, featuring award-winning role-players from an award-winning website.
May I introduce the MPK-45? One of our newest machine pistols. My company makes these, you know.
Fine. Will it stop one of these?
Ah!
Recorded in CD quality.
In binaural surround sound.
Horror on the Orient Express. A classic campaign for Call of Cthulhu. Coming in 2007 from YogSothoth.com.
Well, we're back with the three-parter, and today on the three-parter, I'm going to be handling a review of Clockworks Games' Spook Show. Nathan will be giving us a nice little rant on the price of gaming books, and Jeremy will be giving us an NPC.
The review.
Alright, Spook Show, which put up by Clockworks Games, written by none other than Aaron Rosenberg of, independent fame now. He's done Trojan War and various other books.
He's actually writing a real novel right now, isn't he?
He actually has three novels out. He's done some novels for Warhammer, for StarCraft, and another one, which I can't... Oh, Exalted. He did an Exalted novel.
Cool.
But I've known Aaron for a while, so I guess I'm a bit biased on this, but I was a playtester for this game, for Spook Show. Real quick, premise of the game is Spook Show is you play a ghost. A ghost who has become a spy, who's working for an intelligence organization, whether it be CIA, Mossad, MI6, doesn't matter. with Spook Show is very interesting game system. You use a D6 and a D10. D6 representing your physical side, D10 representing your spiritual side. And you roll your bearings in every scene to see how strong in each aspect you are, which gives you the chance of course, you could lock up and not be able to do much of anything, and your friends have to help you maintain the Spook Show. The Spook Show in and of itself is basically maintaining the illusion of life. You are a ghost. You, through the sheer force of will, you can take on physical form. You can fade out into the ghostly form, which is, you know, sort of the blue shades, best represented, I think, by in The Frighteners. With Spook Show, you, like I said, you are a member of an intelligence organization, and generally, when you play this game, you're playing as part of a team. You choose the type of character you're going to play, whether it be a hitter, a rigger, a scout, anything like that. That determines your pay grade. That determines various things. You choose what shade you are, which is the type of ghost. It can be like a banshee or a haunt or a ghoul, poltergeist, phantasms. Sort of an example, like a ghoul. Ghouls are sort of the grumpy ghosts that they see life as precious, wonderful things that they don't have anymore. However, like banshees, they see life as precious and they want to protect it. Will-o'-the-wisps are sort of carefree spirits. Once you determine your shade and your classification, which is, you know, the type of what character you're playing, whether it be a pilot, a rigger, a scout, that sort of thing, you go ahead and choose your skills and move on into the actual game itself, where you actually are spies. And you have to, you know, do whatever spies do, whether it's, you know, go steal these plans, et cetera, et cetera. Just the added thing is you're a ghost, and you can use your powers to help you accomplish this mission, but you have to maintain the Spook Show. You can't let on that you're undead, you're a ghost. It's an interesting game system. It was the second game put out by Clockworks, and it's definitely a very blue game. Yeah, blue is the motif. I really enjoyed playing this. It's definitely a game you have to have a good GM for, because there is a lot going into it with various abilities you can have, and you have to, as in any kind of an espionage game, is you have to have a GM that's ready to work with you and be able to improvise really well. It's a heavy role-playing type of a system, not as heavy as some of his other stuff in the Clockworks line, but Spook Show is definitely my favorite game that Clockworks has put out. I do really enjoy how the mechanics work and the roll your bearing system can actually make things very interesting, where the other players have to step up. Like if you lock up, the other players have to step up and sort of help you get through the scene. It's an interesting system. I really enjoy it. The spy genre has always been a fun thing. So basically imagine James Bond and if he were dead and he's a ghost. I'd highly recommend it. You can find out information on the Clockworks website. You can actually pick up Spook Show at Amazon or any of those places. But you know, go to your local game store and have your local game store order you a copy. It's a fun game. Very fun.
Can you play non-ghost?
It does give you rules in that, but non-ghost versus a regular ghost is obviously, you know, you have issues there. Mm-hmm. But it does add a little bit of interesting things to it. You can play a mundane where in the team, and which actually makes it interesting because the mundane can't know that the other people are ghosts, so the others have to do their best to keep that from you. But there are rules for that in there as well. There is an expansion for this called Outside Standard Channels, which details different types of ghosts, other than the ghouls, the banshees, that sort of thing. It details, like, the ghosts that are locked into houses, or ghosts in the machine, that sort of thing. And that's available on their website as well. they keep promising, and Aaron, if you're listening, you have to do this, another expansion called Mortal Danger, which talks about the other people, the other special things in the Spook Show world, like exorcists and sensitives and werewolves and vampires and weird stuff, because obviously ghosts exist, that stuff can too. But I really enjoy it. It's a good game.
I like the game too. When I first met Aaron Rosenberg, I was actually had agreed to work for him at his booth at Gen Con. And before I went, I was asked to at least look through the material, peruse through the material of the three books that he had, which were Spook Show, Asylum, and Chosen. And out of all the books, Spook Show is the only one that I actually picked up and proceeded to read the whole book. It was the one that caught my attention the most. I've since gone back and read Asylum, because Asylum is a very interesting system. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a chance to read Chosen, though. I hear that Chosen is a very detailed system. But I like Spook Show the best, but again, my style of gaming runs more along the investigative side rather than the fantastical side. So I heartily recommend the book. It's a good book. Its price is very affordable, too. I think it's $30.
25.
It's not a horribly expensive book.
$25.
And
cover price. I think that's still what it is now. I think the book, as far as I know, the book's still in print. It was published back in, 1997. So it's about 10 years old now, but I think it's still in print.
And it's not a horribly expensive book. $25 is a pretty good price. And there's not a whole lot of extra material that you have to particularly buy to make everything work the way you want to. Pretty much everything's enclosed in the book.
Unlike his first game with Asylum, where you also had to get marbles to play, this game just uses the standard dice, and you drop $25 and you get the main book, and that's all you're going to need. There is the expansion you can get if you want to, but I'd say only get that if you have a lot of people who really love Spook Show. But it's a good book, good price, soft cover, small press. Definitely support this. It's a good system.
On top of that, if we support this game system, maybe he'll bring out some more books for us to check out.
Exactly.
The Rant.
I've got a fairly good one today, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels this way. But yeah, book prices. You know, most of us are working our tails off to make rent, pay our bills, and have enough money left over to eat and put gas in our vehicles, the horribly overpriced gas, to get us back and forth to that job so we have money to pay our bills and eat. And then we have, you know, our hobbies that we'd like to be able to buy stuff for us so that we can support it. However, when you go to the bookstore and this brand new book is out, and you're all excited. It's the latest supplement for your favorite role-playing game. And you flip the thing over, and it's a paperback, and the book costs $40. Yeah, that's a little retarded. Especially considering the actual cost on that book to print it is less than $3, and the cost to actually get the people to write it is not super horrible. It's not like trying to do a movie. You know, movies charge you $20 a pop to own the movie, and you get the movie for good, and you pay $8 to go see it in the movie theater, or $12 depending on where you're at, and that helps support the movie. But $40 a pop for a book, that's really way out there, and especially considering as a general stereotype, and I say stereotype because it is a stereotype, most gamers are not what we exactly would call rich, which means that when we really want a book, we either have to wait and pray that someone picks it up and doesn't like it and returns it to a half-price bookstore so we can pick it up at half price, which doesn't really support the gaming companies in the first place, or we have to bite the bullet and buy that book and not buy something else later because we can't afford to. And it doesn't make sense to make it like with the D&D system. There's three books. You don't really have to have all of them, but at least two of them you do. The Monster Manual and the Player's Handbook are really, you have to have them to play D&D unless you want to do the source reference material online that's free.
The SRD.
But to play D&D, you want those books. And if you want to get into it, if you've never played it before, you'll really want to pick up the Dungeon Master's Guide as well. Those are $40 a piece. That's $120 for all the books you need to play a game. That's a lot of money to shell out just to play a game. And I know a lot of people out there going, but Nathan, the books, you can use them forever and ever and ever. Yeah, they said that about 3.0, and then 6 months later they had 3.5 out. So all that money we spent on the 3.0 books, which were 20 bucks a pop, if you remember when they originally came out. Because people threw a fit when they say they wanted 40 bucks for them. So they lowered the price. And then they revised the rules and immediately brought out 3.5, and they were 40 bucks a pop. So they got their $40 a pop out of us anyways. But, you know...
They also cut down on some of the pages. I'm not saying they're the only ones, but it seems to be that the books are becoming less and less substantial.
Well, the reason they do that is because they know if they can get you to buy a 180-page reference book for $30, well then you'll definitely, if it doesn't have all the material you want, you'll definitely pay another $30 for another 180-page book that doesn't have all the material you want. All it is it turns back to the whole capitalistic system, which is people will only buy, or the market will only bear what people are willing to support.
There have been many a time when I would go out to pick up a book, and it, you know, where I say, okay, if this was $5 or $10 cheaper, I'd buy it.
Yeah.
It makes you be really picky on what you get.
Which means that a lot of those companies out there.
This isn't just aimed at the big companies. There are some small press companies that overcharge for their stuff.
I can think of one right off the top of my head that starts with an M and ends with an E.
Yeah. That's one. I could think of another that starts with an A.
And I understand when you have colored pictures, that raises the price.
Yeah, color printing is very expensive.
You don't always need color printing. You can have good artwork. And mm-hmm. we're all about supporting these artists and writers when you have good books. But when you throw out crap and then expect people to buy it for the high prices, that's not going to work.
Also, another point of reference, just because we're a predominantly male-oriented hobby... doesn't mean that every cover has to have some big-breasted woman on the front wearing scantily clad armor.
Thank you, Avalanche Press.
Because that doesn't really make us want to buy the book. What makes us want to buy the book is the fact that we open the book and go, wow, I can use this material. When we open it up and go, wow, what a flaming pile of...
Smurf.
I could never use this book for anything I ever want to do. I'm going to put this back on the shelf and save my 50 bucks for something else. Yeah. Just make sure that if you're making a product and you're charging us... $45 for it, or $39.95, or whatever the hell price they're charging. Some books are up to like $49.95 a piece now, which is as much as a computer game. And, you know, with computer games, for those of us who don't have great imaginations, they run, that works a lot better for us. But for those of us with, you know, imagination, we like the books better. But that's the same price, and the reason why I think that a lot of gaming companies are failing is that we, as a hobbyist group, we cannot afford to continue to spend this much money on our hobby. It's getting to the point where we've decided to go without rather than to pay the exorbitant price for the material. Because if it's in a book and someone thought of it, more than likely with enough thinking about it yourself, you can come up with enough material that would be covered in the book to use for yourself in your own gaming system anyways.
Yep.
So, $50. Cut it out. We can't afford that. We are poor.
And even if we can't afford it, sometimes we refuse to afford that.
Yeah. Even if we could afford it and it's a great book, we might refuse to buy the book on the general principle that we don't feel that $50 is an appropriate price for a book. And yeah, color artwork,
great.
It's great, but it doesn't need to be there.
Okay, not always. And things like, if you're going to have a paperback book... it needs to have paperback prices. If you're going to have crappy art and good material, well, you need to have crappy art prices.
There are several companies out there that have bad art, bad covers, decent material, yet they charge $40 a book. And I still wouldn't
buy 90 pages.
Also, if you have a book, if you put out a book and it's costing between $39 to $40 to $50, you better make sure that there are not simple errors that any editor can.
That would be nice. Yes.
I can think of at least one company
that happens to every company. I expect some typos here and there, but.
But there's one that
that's just ridiculous.
Errors everywhere, and they're still good material. But you do kind of get to the point where you're like, hey, well, there's another one. There's another one.
Oh, yeah, wait, I was surprised that I found spelling errors and errors in the latest Shadowrun book, the fourth Ed rulebook. There's spelling errors in it, which surprised me because their material has always been very concise, and it's like it always seemed like it was triple, quadruple checked. But the new one has spelling errors in it.
And that's a good thing about
structure, grammatical errors
that's
too.
That's a good thing about reading book reviews, listening to podcasts. Let somebody else buy the book first and listen to the reviews.
Yeah, and that's another thing. If you can find a podcast that does reviews for companies, mm-hmm. you know, that companies send them material to review, that's great. Do that. Listen to them wholeheartedly. I don't know any, really.
Pulp Gamer is probably one of the best, and also The Tome. Have Games Will Travel with Paul Tevis is good. Yeah. I still haven't had a chance, as of recording this, a chance to listen to The Tome, but he was kind enough to send us a personalized promo. So.
Yeah, promo, yeah.
Yeah, seems like a very nice guy. He was very nice in his email.
We'll have to...
And Pulp Gamer also played our promo.
Did they really? Yes. Well, give a shout-out to them, then. Cool.
But, those are some great ones to listen to reviews. Obviously, we'll give you the best review as we can, but those guys do it exceptionally.
We're not reviewers.
We're geeks.
But Paul, I'll say Paul Tevis on Half Games Will Travel is a great resource for games. Also, All Games Considered has a good reviewer on there. She's great. But
ending the rant now, $50, yes. bucks, it better be worth it. If it's not, yeah, there'll be hell to pay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not really, because they already have your money.
We've got character.
And I'm going to do Mr. Pennywinkle. Charles Pennywinkle, I believe his name was. He was an NPC that was actually a focal point for my World of Darkness story that actually took place in Lawrence, Kansas, which was pretty funny. He was a character that everybody ended up having to go to for whatever reason. Either one, he posted their bail or the lawyer that got him out of jail, or two, he happened to be one of their uncles, or three, he just knew stuff that people needed to know, and everybody happened to come to his store. And he wore bright colors. He was kind of like in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka. He was a Willy Wonka character. He's very happy, very mystical, but he had a darker side. A side that really only his nephew ever saw. Not very often either, but his nephew, which is another player, started noticing that Mr. Pennywinkle was not a nice person. And just things he would say when nobody else was around, and things he wanted the nephew to do, like break into an asylum, which happened to be in Baldwin, after Baldwin was destroyed by a crashing airplane that
had toxic chemicals.
Chemicals and vaporized.
Was it a plane or was it a trainer?
It was a plane.
It was a plane that crashed.
Plane crash.
That vaporized all of Baldwin, which is unfortunate. I like Baldwin, but you know sometimes cities have to be vaporized by chemicals.
Well, the great place was the Sunflower Munitions plant that was supposed to be abandoned.
And there was werewolves, and there was
vampires.
There was actually there was plenty of vampires downtown in various goth bars and stuff. Anyway, but Mr. Pennywinkle was going to give his nephew the magical rings that would allow his nephew to gain more magical power. But to gain those rings, Mr. Pennywinkle wanted other things. And he kept having the other players do different things, which really was just to get him out of the way, while he had his nephew collect items for him. It was always weird items. But one of them was, I believe it was blood from the craziest insane individual in the deepest depth of the insane asylum in Baldwin, which when the nephew went in there was like demonic runes on the walls, and it was just crazy.
Yeah, that thing was nasty too.
Yeah, and he had to fight it and bring it back. Well, it turns out Mr. Pennywinkle, for all of his giving candy to children and having a happy magical store, was actually trying to create a giant paradox storm, basically, and turn the world into a giant playground so that he could use magic anytime he wanted. He wanted to become a mage of such power that Paradox would not touch him and that he was the ultimate power. He wanted to become God on Earth.
And we ended up eventually stopping him, but he almost killed us all.
And the party had to stop him. And it was a great game that he worked out well. I think, I don't even remember which session it was that people finally in character actually realized? Figured out that
two game sessions before the end game.
Something was wrong with Mr. Pennywinkle. Because every time...
Ethan's character figured it out earlier because he got to walk in on the paradox when he was remembering back when the Nazis stormed his house.
That is true. Mr. Pennywinkle did have a very messed up childhood. He was actually, when he was younger, the Nazis did actually storm his house and kill his parents. So he did have some extra baggage.
Extra baggage, my ass.
But he was just a lot of fun. So basically, you know, take a character that everybody loves and is somewhat mystical, like, you know, Willy Wonka, and add a twist, especially in the World of Darkness. It's great. You know, make him the nice guy that gives candy to children and donates money to charities. And, you know, and then have him, I don't know, eat the same babies he gives candy to or is raising
or
vampires in the basement.
Dresses up like a clown and then goes and knocks on those kids' doors to let them into the house so that he can come eat their parents.
Never speak again. Ever. Mr. Pennywinkle, great NPC, based on Willy Wonka, bit twisted, focal point of the story for the NPCs, caused so much trouble, so have fun.
Atomic batteries to power, turbines to speed.
Roger, ready to move out.
Hello, I'm Wichita Rutherford from 5 Minutes with Wichita, and I'm here to tell you about the Podcast 411 podcast. Now, Rob, he interviews other podcasters to find out what they've learned about doing a podcast, and it's been described as inside the actor's studio, except it's for podcasts. His past guests include Adam Curry, he's the Podfather, Senator John Edwards, C.C. Chapman, PK&J, Bib and Yes, Chris Rockwell, and yours truly, Wichita Rutherford. That's just naming a few of them. Now, if you want to learn more about podcasting or podcasters, then you go over and visit them at podcast411.com. And remember, listen different with Podcast 411. It's just so precious.
You're a googly moogly.
That being said, we're back to the, what's it called?
Random Encounters.
Random Encounters. Yeah, we still haven't gotten any information yet. We haven't really...
No,
we've had some posts on the forums.
I'll have to travel back in time and you know, talk about the whatever feedback I have when I edit this episode together.
This is Ethan cutting in from the future, coming in with some feedback. It is the wonderful February 4th, and I do have a ton of feedback to go into today. If you've stopped by our forums, we've got a topic out there called Dancing Bugbears and Stuff, started by Jeremy, or Latinius, for NPCs. And we've gotten some cool ones on there from one from Working Man that he used in Forgotten Realms in a Waterdeep campaign, named a bard named Scaramouche, that acted as a source of information for the party. He also moonlighted as a crime fighter. Check it out on the forums. There's also an NPC from Army D. See, it's Army Day One, ARMYDEONE. Sorry if I completely butchered that, buddy. He has an NPC he adores. She's based off the Oracle of Delphi. Slight twist is she's an ancient green dragon. Her lair sits atop a volcanic vent, which gives her the visions. And a kobold named Krathik is the only one who can interpret her draconic ramblings. Cybernerd put up a really funny one on there about a solitary kobold that he ran into, that his characters ran into. That someone cast, looks like Comprehend Languages, and his clicks and pops ended up being, "What are you doing? What's going on? You better back off. I'm really going to kill you, Dad. That's right. I have ninja skills." Yeah, ninja skills. It's too funny, but it's priceless. It's really funny. Visit the forums, though. Post more NPCs up there. These are kind of cool. Now, I do have some feedback from Kevin, who sent us a feedback about Exalted, as well as John sent us a Random Encounters question We're going to address those the next time we get together to record, so it's probably going to be posted up next week, I hope. I don't want to go into what questions they are, but, you know, they're good ones, and I want to go into those next week. So stay tuned. Keep the feedback rolling in, guys. We're loving it. It's great stuff. Now I'll just can slip back into the time stream now.
So if you happen to run into our characters on World of Warcraft, once it starts working again properly.
Yeah, Burning Crusade just came out yesterday, and we've
Olden
been having nothing but problems.
Olden server, for some reason, there's some problems. Blizzard, you need to get on that. We pay you lots of money to cause us to be mindless.
Yeah, we can't be mindless anyway, if you won't let the servers be up.
Yeah. Anyway, if you happen to run into any of our characters, we are trying to start the Gamers Haven Guild on World of Warcraft.
Again, on the Olderman server.
Olderman server.
Solyndra.
Solyndra. Also, if you happen to contact Solyndra and you have the materials, I'll enchant something for you for a tip. But
yeah, I've now got my blacksmithing up to 240, and I am armorsmithing, but unfortunately it appears that, from what I understand from recent patches, that all the high-level blacksmithing web or armor smithing items that you can make are now bind on pickup, which sucks, because it means I can't make it for anybody else.
If you spam me, I'll put you on ignore.
Don't spam Jeremy. Jeremy's a good guy.
Don't spam anybody.
Yeah, don't be nice to people in World of Warcraft.
But please sign our guild charter. I don't want to have to go down the newbie area and be like, sign this.
We'll give you 10 silver.
Sign this. I would actually like to have people who want to be part of it.
Yeah.
And we're going to be a new guild, you know, we still are testing the waters, don't have anything set up for raids and stuff like that, so if you have any ideas.
Although we may, if people want to, we may do a trivia type thing, which is something I saw in another guild that I was in, which was always fun. People just throw in their random magic items that they don't think they can disenchant for anything good or anything, and throw them into a little pot, and every week just throw a random trivia thing out there and give away, you know, magic items to people.
Or and that's something like, we may do once we get the guild actually started, but we have to get signatures first. Remember, Ethan doesn't play. He doesn't have a character at all. Maybe he doesn't have a dwarven warrior at all that runs around.
Named Thurgrim.
Named Thurgrim that runs around at all.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
And
obviously, you're trying to set me up for some sort of horrible, horrible, embarrassing fall.
My paladin's level 42 now. You'll see me running around on my nice little horse.
Awesome, Thorgrim.
Never gave him the name.
My name of my paladin? Mm-hmm. My pally's name is Sharian. We all decided very early on that the human males look like football players, and since most of us have horrible recurring nightmares about football players, big joke.
But he might.
Yeah.
No. I just thought they looked stupid.
They look goofy. The men look goofy. Pretty much everybody that we play with decided to play as women because women just...
Well, human
women, because the women just don't make you feel like you want to rip your eyes out. So, I'm playing, my character's name is Sharian.
Unless you're dwarven.
Dwarf rule!
Yep. Got 240 blacksmithing skill now. If you got the materials, just give me a page and I will make you whatever you want as long as I have the recipe for it. So check us out. Come join our guild.
Dwarf rule.
Join the crack.
Yes, join the crack. Join the addiction.
The dark side.
You guys are evil.
Yes, we are.
Manskeet.
Especially considering I just hooked you up with an extra 3 months of it.
You're evil.
Manskeet.
I'm getting track marks now.
But you're not playing.
Yeah, I'm not playing.
At all.
Ever.
No.
I'm never playing a warrior named Thurgrim.
And remember, on the forum, we are looking for NPC ideas. Anything, just throw them out.
Oh, and art. I posted a thing on there about if you have art, I'd like to start up an art gallery on our website.
And if you're a big company and want us to do a review of your stuff, send it to us. We will review
yes,
it.
Yes, so if the three of you listening to us know any companies that want to send us free stuff, well, we're shameless.
Yeah, we will basically sell out for free stuff.
Exactly. But until next time, something witty to say.
Castle Grayskull.
Castle Grayskull!
You can visit us on the web at CanadianCrusaders.FistfulOfComics.com. You can visit our website there, leave us an audio. You can call our voicemail line at 206-984-4122. Leave a message on the Frapper map. can drop us an email at thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. And you could also just visit the forums on Fistful of Comics. We have our own little section there.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Gamers Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 2.5 license, and is hosted by the fine folks at www.fistfulofcomics.com and is a Thousand Monkeys production. Now there's just one room, and it's got eye for an eye. And if you swallow the drug, you'll be fast to die.
That's true. Well, we're not sure. We still haven't decided if the atomic robots came before or after.
That's true. But, you know, time will tell with that series.
Yeah.
Atomic robots.
I don't think there'll be any atomic robots. If you don't like clowns, don't watch the second season of Supernatural.
So, Mr. Pennywinkle, happy-go-lucky character.
Well, watch the second season of Supernatural. Just don't watch the second episode.
Yeah, you could do that.
CSI Bittenheim?
Middenheim? Heard that today. It was really funny.
Middenheim
from Warhammer.
Yeah.
CSI Middenheim. Sorry. Anyway.
Because they dwell in almost the same areas.
Not against my deep ones, because, you know, I couldn't roll worth crap when I introduced deep ones.
Well,
they were like,
yeah.
I'm retarded and I shoot myself in the face. Don't even have a gun. I still shoot myself in the face.
Yeah, too bad we don't live in France where they have laws against selling crappy products.
But that's France.
That's France.
They have it in Britain, too.
I don't want to live in France.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on that's France.
Golf clap.
Golf clap. I think we're going to stop that because that sounds very disturbing.
And we say hi to those three listeners.
Hey! Hi,
I wonder how you miniaturized it. Mm. You made it the size of a penny. I thought they had to be huge to generate that 1.21 gigawatts.
Well, also, that's 1980s technology, too.
Yeah. No movie has had a good beholder.
It tastes good with ketchup.
Beholders?
Sure.
Oh, okay. How about 1939?
Do you want me to break your kneecaps?
Sure! Can I replace them or something?
Yeah, it's not worth it.
I've been keeping it in the closet.
Yeah, I know. I've been making lots of them, actually.
Dang it.
You know, building them into contraptions, rings, cars. You know, that pen over there, that's a time machine. My intelligence is a 4! Outrageous! Fabulous secret power revealed to me the day I held aloft my magic sword. Said, by the power of great Grayskull, I have the power. No, nothing. Denied.
We'll send rent.
In Quatloos, yes.
Well, yeah, of course.
I'll have to print some more Quatloos up. Mint some more.
Fight the Reaper.
Don't fear the Reaper.
No, I say fight the Reaper.
Okay, fight the Reaper. Ah, lives.
Oh, sleep. Yeah. Sleep is an overrated excuse for caffeine.
One of our three listeners can correct us.
Exactly.
Oh, we have more than three listeners. It's just three listeners we know about.
There's three listeners that aren't related to us.
Yes.
There you go. Oh, no. Just don't beat on the time machine.
I pushed it into the magma.
No, you pushed the refrigerator into the magma.
Dang it. Well, I better go back in time and fix that.